Welcome to Futile Podcast. Tonight we got
Matt,
Kyle Reese,
Malcolm De Soto,
Michael
Duncan.
Okay. And we're going to talk about from 1979, directed by Ridley Scott, written by Dan O'Bannon and some other dude. Story by Dan O'Bannon. Alien, the original, the one that started it all, sort of, I guess. Mm. We were talking about this earlier. There's Alien and there's Aliens. Aliens was made 8 years later, 1987.
86.
Was it 86?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was 79, right?
I think so, yeah. So, okay, so 7 years later, with Cameron writing and directing it.
James Cameron used to be a truck driver.
Yep.
What?
And then he saw Star Wars and got it pissed off.
He is good looking, though.
He's not charming, though. Apparently he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you only need, like, one of the traits. You don't have to...
Well, you need...
I don't know if I have any of them.
You
what?
Need to be in the right place at the right time, and you need to make yourself be there. Thing.
There's no conviction in your eyes at all. Give us a spiel. What is Alien about?
It's a sci-fi horror film, but unlike most of the sci-fi horror films up until then... It's done with a certain sensibility and a certain craft that I think you could say that something like Star Wars got the ball rolling on people taking science fiction a little more seriously. If you realize up until then, almost everything science fiction had been... There had been some interesting movies like Forbidden Planet and stuff that like had good set design. And
that is arguably the one that got sci-fi rolling.
To a degree,
that was
yeah.
the first one with a budget.
Yeah, exactly.
What is it? What is Forbidden Planet?
Leslie Nielsen.
Tempest yeah. in space.
I want to see it. Didn't they just... No. Yeah, they just made a Tempest film, didn't they?
Yeah.
They did, but that was the actual Tempest.
Yeah, I want to watch that. So the Tempest in space.
Leslie Nielsen. Give us a 90-second...
Feel of how that works.
Leslie Nielsen and his crew arrive on a planet inhabited by a father and his daughter and a huge monster that is destroying things. And so
is it a cockroach?
It is not a cockroach.
Is this from Erotic anyway? Because you're losing me.
A little bit.
It's made in the 50s.
All right. The daughter like hasn't seen other dudes, so
yeah,
there's that
the
angle.
Yeah, this is the first time she's ever seen a guy. Right. She falls in love with Leslie Nielsen. He's got to save him from
the
monster.
Maybe in the 50s, I guess he would have been like...
Yeah, he was like serious in the 50s.
Okay.
This is before Airplane. So.
Yeah.
Airplane was 1980.
So he actually didn't Leslie
have
like
Wilson
white hair.
Had a career before Airplane?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He had some... Yeah.
Boring.
I think he had blonde hair.
He had dark hair, didn't he?
Did he have dark hair? It wasn't very dark in this movie.
Maybe
he was light brown.
If I could become prematurely gray, I think I could become the richest man in Humboldt County. If I gray before 28, I think I can pull that off.
I would like that.
Okay.
But continue.
Forbidden Planet, a decent budget, you're right. Up until then, and even a lot after, it was very hokey, giant ants chasing people. I mean, something like Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a good allegory about the Red Scare and communism and all that. I mean, as a story, it's a good story, but it's a pretty straightforward, you know, people in a small town. I mean, it's what the Aliens and Predators movies have become. The last Alien versus Predator R is basically just that. It's just like people in a town, a little
Can
tiny town, and then aliens.
That film? That
yeah.
film offended me on some
level. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad.
Just as a person, not even as a movie maker.
Yeah.
There was a scene where a guy got impaled. Remember this?
I think
he gets impaled by the tail, and then he's hunky dory.
He's impaled by the tail. Through his back. It's like going like 6 feet through the guy.
Lift it
He's
up.
Being waved around, and then like it rips out of him, and then he like coughs for a second. Okay, guys, let's go. And he makes it out alive. There's a giant hole in his chest.
He
it's
survives.
Like, how did that happen?
He survives, yes.
Is he a robot?
No!
Not an android.
He
no,
should have been. Fuck.
I had a pitchfork thrown through my arm, and I was fine.
What?
No big deal.
Giant Anchorman died that way. Alright, that's lethal.
Pitchfork.
I think it was a trident.
It was a trident. In Anchorman, it was a trident. So
you cut my arm off.
You mostly don't have... I mean, you mostly just don't have that. You don't have, like, people taking sci-fi that seriously to, like, put the craft behind it and actually make it look good and make it epic and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when Alien came out, sci-fis weren't really considered as
well,
a series.
Well, Star Wars was 77.
Because Aliens was the first sci-fi film to get nominated for an Oscar, wasn't it?
Aliens?
Yeah.
What about 2001?
Yeah, 2001 got nominated.
You mean any Oscar or Best Picture?
I think it might have been Best Picture. I'm not entirely certain, but I think
Aliens was nominated.
No, Aliens wasn't, no.
It was something. There was something. Was it like the one to win the most Oscars? Or I remember.
I don't know anything about
Cameron
that.
Maybe Cameron was just like jacking off in an interview. I don't know.
It's possible. Yeah. It's possible it might have been one of the first to win some new category on visual effects or something. I don't know though.
I can't believe it beat 2001. That was pretty big in its time.
I don't know enough about 2001 to say.
2001 was 68, so it was. They were different years.
You know what they won in the Oscars?
No. Yeah. No, I don't know. I think it won visual, some kind of, there were special effects back then, and it won that, of course.
Yeah.
So, you have Star Wars, and then you kind of start seeing, you know, you get the Battlestar Galactica TV show. There's people trying to do sci-fi with some degree of a budget, with some degree of seriousness on some vague level.
Yeah.
Huh?
Doctor Who.
Well, Doctor Who had been around a little before that, maybe, but Doctor Who was a different kind of thing, I guess. But yeah, this movie is just so well crafted. We were talking about it before. Every aspect of it, every department, the set design, the sound design, the score. The score is one of the most muted, like subtle scores around. I mean, it's at the beginning, it's at the end, it's in a couple places subtly used throughout the film. But that last whole sequence where she's like running around and the ship's about to destruct, it's all sound design, it's all score through, you know, the like and you know, rather than like forcing this kind of like overbearing like timpani and crazy amounts of music to be like be excited, be crazy. They're just like, no, we're just gonna let it do this. And Ridley Scott seems to sort of know what he's doing for the most part. Most of his camera moves are good. Most of his positions are good. It's got a certain kind of pacing to it, where, you know, that first act, it's very slow. There's something ominous, but you don't really know what's going to happen. I remember as a kid seeing it, being kind of bored with it at first, because it is pretty slow. It does take a while. There's a lot of guys talking about, like, shares and, like, very real kind of, like, blue-collar conversation. But it looks so pretty, and it's so well-made as a movie that you're kind of like, okay, well, this is, I'll watch this.
You know, jumping onto that, I want to say I've seen this movie maybe, like, two or three times before, but watching it on Blu-ray, I feel like I enjoyed it more. I'm slow with this Blu-ray revolution, but I enjoyed it more watching it on this HD monitor and Blu-ray than I've ever enjoyed the film before.
I agree. Yeah, a Blu-ray with a transfer that really is, and this is definitely one of the best I've seen.
Exceptional transfer.
Where it really does elevate it to that next level of pristine quality does help to draw you into the movie. It's that much better looking, so it's that much more cinematic. So it really grabs your eyeballs and
it was phenomenal. What did you think about the fact that this was the director's cut? I mean, there wasn't that much.
Yeah, it added the scene where you find out what happens to Dallas. Because if you think about it, you never see him after that one shot where, you know, the alien kind of sticks its arms out like, surprise! Like, happy birthday! And,
which it's it looked like it was moving in for a hug.
Yeah. There are a couple of hokey moves with the alien in this. And I mean, they cut around it for the most part.
Yeah.
But this is just such a solid movie. You've got characterization in almost every character. None of the characters are two-dimensional. They all have, like, little quirks about things that they talk about, and you get just a little bit of them, even if, you know, they eventually go. So you kind of care about seeing every one of them, you know?
If you had seen this movie before all the other films came out, you wouldn't really know who the protagonist was until later on, I mean, because they're so well-developed. There's no, like, focus on Ripley. I mean, it's
weird. It's very weird. It's like a little kid. You're watching it, and I like seen a few horror movies, and I was like, okay, you
she
know.
She almost had the least going on in the beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you think that it's going to be the captain at the end, because it's going to be the dude that's going to save the day, you know? And you already can kind of tell who's going to die and in about what order, following typical horror movie stereotype garbage. And
I just want to point out,
they throw that out.
Ridley Scott and Ripley, that is neat.
Mm-hmm. What's her last name?
Ripley.
Ripley.
Ellen Ripley. You don't find out in this movie, but in Aliens, she reveals in a very intimate moment in the director's cut that her first name is Ellen.
Okay.
Dwayne. Ellen.
I think you get it earlier than that. Yeah.
And that was like the most romantic that film got.
Yeah.
Which was nice that it didn't do that stupid stuff. There was even a little bit of that in this one, too, where that's what I say about, like, in the first act or that first 40 minutes, it's kind of a long first act, which can usually kill a movie, but in this case, I think that it makes up for it later on.
The subject matter kind of keeps you going.
And the characters are interesting enough. And you even get, like, that interaction between Ripley and Dallas after they've all been... He's all pissed at her about how not letting them back on the ship, and she kind of did what was right. And then I guess that's why she gets to survive, right? Mm-hmm. But how she... It's almost like a romantic comedy moment where she bangs the thing and closes the door on him and then forces him to have to talk to her.
Yeah.
And their interaction there, like, you can almost tell, like, maybe there's a little something going on between them. It's very subtle. It's never really, really... It doesn't go any further than it needs to because it isn't relevant to the story if they have a deeper relationship. It's just that there's the potential for something there.
If we look at this film as a singular entity, I agree with you, but just knowing that she's got, like, a daughter, she's got, like, a family, you know, all that shit going on Earth, it's...
Well, I mean, the daughter thing is only in the director's cut, right?
Well, it's in Aliens.
Yeah, it's in the Alien. It's in the director's cut, only of Aliens. Because it's hokey.
Really?
It's one of those Cameron hokey, like, gotta lead the audience, like, gotta take, like...
No, it is. It is.
I think it's the actual.
In the director's cut, they extend that scene with the projector on the wall, I think, a little bit.
I don't remember.
Something about that scene is extended. I swear. Yeah,
I don't remember.
I remember Bert coming in and saying, you know, she was going to be 11 years old.
That's kind of pivotal to the actual storyline, I think. I mean, it's
In the second one, you mean?
In the beginning, because it's like... In the beginning, there's no reason for her to ever go back. So it's like, what's going on in your life? It's like, time has passed. Your daughter...
Well, she got back to Earth just because it's like, that's where people live.
Yeah, so it's like, she's back now, what? Where's my daughter?
I don't think that the daughter thing was relevant in the second one at all. I think that the motherly instinct stuff with Newt...
It was such a short scene,
she wasn't really going to do anything. She was like, I'm back. Fuck you guys, I'm not trying to get involved in this. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. The second one?
Yeah. I don't really remember much of it.
The second one is...
It's an action film. This one was definitely suspenseful.
I like the second one more as a kid because this one is scary enough. Like as you're a little kid, it like makes you scared.
There's a lot. I mean, the simplest way to say it is this one was a really scary film. The second one's a James Cameron film.
Yeah, that's a simple way to say it. I mean, or you just go by genre. But like getting back to sort of what I was talking about, this movie took the genre of like a suspense film.
Yeah.
And I mean, rather than just being like a horror movie, like it's not Alien Attack with an exclamation point. It's just Alien. I mean, it's done in such a way. I mean, it's just like such a no-brainer. It's like you get competent people from the get-go to design things, to think about things, to work out the structure on things, and you're gonna probably get a good movie. And that's what they get here, you know?
Right. It's a good movie. Should I drop that knowledge on that I shared with you guys about what Ben Bettenhausen is doing?
Yeah,
I think it's fairly obvious considering who ends up alive.
Right. Okay. Ian, have you heard the
Ripley was originally going to be a man or something?
No, that Alien is a feminist film. And look at those eyes. And so
am I supposed to be angry about?
No, I mean so you have the mother, and that's kind of the
ship is named Mother.
Exactly, and then you know you move on, and then there's like this
even though Mother impregnation, ends up screwing everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
There's like this impregnation of a male, and it gives birth to like this monster creature that they all have to defend, and the one who does defend him is this strong female character.
Yeah, sure.
They're different. Essentially, I mean, and I got all this from Ben Bettenhausen.
You could do a feminist.
How do you feel about this? Looking at a feminist reading
is pretty straightforward.
Obvious, I think.
There are a lot of people say that this is a feminist film.
Well, yeah, because she survives.
Yeah, the woman survives. The woman not only does the woman survive, but the woman demonstrates traits that that show that she's not just a, like, by luck tripping and falling and happens this way. She's very competent.
It's so rare.
She's very driven.
She's so rare in Hollywood.
She's by the book, yeah.
Well, the character first scene who doesn't become hysterical
where she's not going to let them back onto the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She demonstrates a strength that,
yeah, exactly.
But that the captain doesn't even have. He's like, oh, well, screw you. Whole
yeah,
rest
right.
Of
the captain's
I'm
kind of a wuss.
We got to, like, let these people in.
Exactly. The captain's a wuss. And you know.
I don't know if he's so much as a wuss as he was like, I don't want to be stranded outside.
No, the captain, exactly. The captain is just part of the cogs and the machine.
I think she
so
called it. She said, yeah, if you were inside here, you'd probably make the same call. It was just the matter of the fact that he was outside.
Yeah, I don't think he would have, actually. I think he would have let him in. But, I mean, that's just her take. The funny thing whenever you start talking about gender in terms of, like, feminist reading or whatever in cinema is that you have to compare it to the stereotypes in order to have any kind of baseline. Now, ironically enough, if Alien is a feminist film, the only other female character in it is the quintessential female bitch.
Yeah.
No, she's bitchy from the get-go, smoking cigarettes and being like, yeah, whatever, fine, I'll deal with it. Not wanting to do it, griping,
whiny,
as they say,
yeah,
whiny. And then she becomes bitchy and hysterical, and it's like, move, just move. And it's, she doesn't move.
Keeping
so,
that
so
in context, how do you feel about her death when the alien inserts his tail into her vagina?
When it kind of comes up around,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
her being the stereotypical.
That's sort of a weird, creepy, like, slasher phallic thing. You're right. Like Matt said, you could kind of do without it. I think I could do without it, but it doesn't horribly offend me. I mean,
and
there are other.
Suddenly,
I'm more offended by the zoom shot on the coolant tanks than anything else. Because it's like, that's just well, like dumb filmmaking or something.
That tail was, like, completely out of place. It was like, that would have found a home in a trauma movie. Movie, but
yeah, exactly.
There
exactly.
No other, there was nothing
well,
sexual.
But again, we're keeping that in mind.
Yeah.
Actually, we're trying to do this feminist statement.
Yeah, no,
well, that's later on. That's a different character.
We're
getting
into that one. I mean, does
Cartwright
see anything else?
Next time you see her, it's her bare foot.
She's stripped down. It's her barefoot.
I guess it makes
it's like the alien stripped her clothes.
Does it make more sense at the very least? Since it's kind of weird without.
Okay, we've lost cohesion here. No one's going to be able to pick this up in the recording. So okay, so what were you guys having your little discussion about there?
Oh God, I was just saying. What was I saying? Something on the lines of, if you knew that it was a feminist film and you looked at it from that perspective, does that scene of her death with the insertion of a tail in her vagina mean anything more, anything less, the same?
I don't know, that's pretty deep.
The alien's an equal opportunity killer, pretty much. So it's irrelevant.
Didn't kill that cat. That cat should have been killed, like, act two.
But it did kind of violently thwack the box away, which is interesting. I don't remember
that shot,
actually.
It can only use, you know, probably beings of a certain size.
Yeah, certain mass.
For the eggs
does
to be.
Talk about the lack
worth
of facehuggers in the Kill Me line. I thought that was a great point.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, in Aliens, okay, what happens is the chestburster comes out of her. And then it becomes clear as she's being torched that she knows she's been impregnated. She knows what's going to happen to her. She's inevitably going to die. Better she die at the hand of a human with a gun than to let this thing come out and wreak havoc. But Dallas, in this movie, hadn't been impregnated with anything. There's obviously no eggs here,
unless
I guess at this
one,
point, in this phase of the Alien series, we don't know
yeah,
whether the
it,
alien
it's really, it's really
or
not.
Was that a director's?
Not a major problem. Yes, it was.
That was new, right?
Yeah. It was not new, but it was a scene he reinserted in the film. I remember seeing that on, like, when it was on Sci-Fi Channel years ago, they had him talking about stuff and talking about that scene. It was a deleted scene.
Did you remember why he deleted it?
I remember why he wanted it in the movie to a degree, is because he liked, like, it kind of it hinted at this, at what the alien might be doing with some of these bodies, you know? And so, yeah, the intention, the idea there in the implication is that it was going to try to continue its life cycle, you know? Because that's the big thing with the creature, too, which is so creative and so imaginative, and they talk about it a little with Ash, the idea of the perfect organism being matched only by its hostility, acid for blood, and the way the life cycle works, it's this egg that then happen. People have to look right down at it at the right time in order for it to get you. But once it's done that, then it parasitically, you know,
right,
goes through different phases, which are all very insidious and very creepy.
I think if you look at this film as a film by itself and don't look at the other films that continue beyond that, I think it works.
I think it works either way.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know that alien doesn't. You don't know how aliens work.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the feminist reading thing is always. It always, to me, seems like it's really tough, because if you were going to go uber feminist, then you would be it seems like it's hard not to be like how do you reconcile basically ascribing to Ripley's character what are ostensibly masculine traits? She's not acting like a female protagonist so much as just a protagonist in a tough situation, yeah. But she's being harsh. She's being kind of brutal and violent and curt and all that. She's not being touchy feely about anything.
I always wonder if she's kind of
exactly. That's what it seemed like. Yeah, rational, right?
Yeah, why not?
I always kind
of think of a man that I take away reason and accountability.
I saw that movie.
That's a good movie.
Damn. Yeah.
I always wonder if these kind of things are just. Director's intent versus what people read into them.
Oh yeah, well a movie like this is good enough now that people are reading into it and people are finding things like issues right. with like the tail and stuff, so, which is put in there because it's like a callback, it's a throwback to an older monster movie type of thing.
Mm-hmm. So
which
when you say it was meant to be
those.
A feminist film, that's like, well, was that the director's intent?
Oh no, I don't think you can say it's meant to be. I think you can just you can do a reading on it and you can make effective arguments one way or the other. That's
sure.
how cinema.
That's how art.
Works.
Unless
yeah,
we
exactly.
get, like, Ridley Scott on the podcast, I don't think we're ever going
to... Well, no, but I think it's pretty clear, unless there were major changes in the casting, like if Ripley was supposed to be a man when they wrote the screenplay,
yeah,
and up till, like, a week before they cast,
how much I know. Yeah.
Then you get that, and not only... It's clear that they're playing with the conventions of horror, if nothing else, and suspense, by having, one, identification of the protagonist and what the protagonist wants and desires are in that first 10 minutes, that first 10 pages, that 10-minute rule, or whatever you want to call it, not even there. Ripley has maybe 3 lines. She has less lines
but,
in the first
in
20
sense,
minutes.
In a sense, you get the fact that they all kind of want the same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. You get that. I'm not saying it's a failure there. It's
yeah.
great there.
Yeah.
But the idea that... all bets are off. I mean, you don't identify Ripley as being the protagonist
no.
at the beginning. If anything, you kind of identify Dallas, but he still seems like a weak protagonist because he's not the main character who doesn't really become the main
he
character.
He dies so soon that it kind of throws the audience off.
It absolutely does, yeah.
Yeah.
Once the leader's gone, once the first two people in Dallas and then John Hurt's character, Kane, are out of there, then, yeah, you've immediately introduced more chaos.
But the beauty of the cinematography about that is that when you don't realize watching the first viewing, and I imagine Michael didn't realize this at all, but the way that they showcase Ripley and like, the shots in the beginning, they definitely put a lot of focus on her. It's not that she's saying anything, it's not that she's doing anything, but there are some shots that are just meant for her.
Oh, yeah.
I noticed that as I watched the film again and again and again and
yeah.
again. I didn't notice that on the first viewing.
Well, I might have noticed that because I know that just because of the series, I know she lives.
Right.
I know she's the protagonist, so I noticed.
Yeah, she's not going... There's no way... It's like a jury thing, you know? She's not
right.
going to be able to go in blind at this point.
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Not living under a rock for the last 20 years.
I'm sorry.
So I noticed
I
that.
Yeah.
Someone told me Bruce Willis was dead in Sixth Sense before I saw it. So
me too.
I was like,
me too. So I didn't like the film as much as everyone else did.
But anyway, yeah, so back to Alien. It's like just well put together...
Malcolm brought a great point up, though, during the screening that I guess I noticed, but once he said it, I was very furious about these damn chains in this wet room. It's like, why the
Well, they explain why the room's wet, even as
but
I mentioned.
But the chains? Why are they hanging? I mean, it looked creepy as shit.
Yeah.
But it was he made me think about it in the light that I've never thought of it before.
I imagine some kind of pulley system for
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you
know, the chains are hanging.
Don't cover up for them, Malcolm.
Well, no, but there's a lot of that going on, and that's what adds that realism to it. It's like it's a dusty, dingy place. And the lighting is always is really good, because like it's kind of almost overlit in places at the beginning, which is how it should be. You want your ship well lit so you don't trip over a cord and then, you know, explosively decompress.
Would a cat run into the wet room?
It does
yeah.
seem unnecessarily wet.
In that scene, you mean?
For a spaceship.
For a cat to run into.
On a spaceship, what do
yeah.
you have?
Yeah.
Electronics.
Yeah.
That don't go well.
It looked like a shower
yeah.
at almost
and,
at some point.
That,
like,
one, that one section is...
Yeah.
It's a beat-up old, like, mining and refinery unit. It's mm-hmm. like a little bit of everything. So, not every room is electronics, and not every room is... Whatever, you know, the coolant is going to leak in certain places. There's going to have to be water, just because it's part of the way that they cycle through systems
like,
and stuff.
Okay, if you're out in space, you're out there for a really long time, so long that the crew has to hibernate, you come up with more advanced systems for cooling, like it would take that water, recycle it, and turn it into drinking water, things like that, you know, that
yeah.
are just like...
They had mentioned that there was, like, maintenance problems and things they hadn't finished repairing on parts of the shuttle and stuff, so, I mean, you get the idea that it's... It's a ramshackle ship on some level.
Yeah, it's like so far in the future that they don't have to take size and weight into consideration, so it's just, it's like this big steam engine of a ship that, where they've just got such an efficient fuel and transportation system, they don't have to worry about leaky, rainy chain rooms.
No, I mean, artificial gravity, I mean, they talk about some of it. Some of it is sci-fi, and some of it is horror cop-out stuff. There's a handful of that in it, and it's such a good movie that you can start to do the nitpicking. Like, what was I nitpicking about? Oh, at the whole end, the whole way the end is orchestrated, it isn't bad by any means, but, like, one of you even said this, and it's absolutely true, that it was mighty convenient that the alien happened to be sleeping right where there's, like, vents for gas. Like, why would there be buttons to gas end that?
So she had options like that, not doing anything. That one's pissing them off.
It's kind of a bit of lazy writing right there at the end to kind of wrap things up. It's like, it's sleeping there, and then, like, well, how does she get it to come out? She's like,
Is it justifiable to do that if you're getting the emotional response out of your audience if they're so scared?
Well, the steam helps to do things.
I don't think that bothers me so much because it's not like so critical. Like, she could have made a noise and it could have come out. Like, eventually it would have come out. So that's not like a critical thing. Like, if she pressed all the gas buttons and none of the gas hit it, she would have been like through some. She would have released the cat or, you know, anything could have brought it out.
What I don't understand is why it's in there sleeping. That's what I don't get.
Yeah.
It didn't know. I mean, is it that smart? I didn't get that from it.
Anyway. They cut the power, man. They're animals.
Maybe it speaks English and I heard that it was going to self destruct and I was like, fuck this, I'm out here.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, maybe it was just sleeping because it knew she was going back to Earth and it's like, oh, I can go and eat more people.
6 billion? Oh, that's great. I'm going to rest before this buffet and then I'm just going to sleep in the little
town.
Yeah, I mean, there are flaws. It's not a movie without its flaws. It is a product of its genre. There are a handful of times when the actual filmmaking and the directing is not that great, in my opinion. The scene, and it might be a better director's cut scene, there are two scenes I can think of where it's just not as engaging as it should be. The scene when they all walk in after Ash has lost the facehugger, and they're just kind of wandering around the med bay looking for where it went.
Kane.
Yeah, after Kane lost the facehugger. It's just like one camera lock-off shot for like about almost 30 seconds, it feels like, where they just kind of like meander about looking in from this one like wide angle.
And it's such an empty room. It's like, where is it hiding?
I disagree on that point because when I originally watched it, I remember that scene being pretty creepy because it's like, being that it's just one locked off shot, and we were all talking during that scene.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
If you're not talking, it's very quiet. And so any small sign, like sound, like when he does knock over that thing, it's like extra scary.
Yeah.
And being that it's such an open space and there's nothing to hide behind, it makes them feel like more vulnerable. It's just like a teeny little creature.
It's definitely effective. I think it's just that lock off shot, that one shot. You talk about when it knocks over, they've already started cutting at that point.
Okay.
I just think that one shot is like 8 seconds too long or something, because you start to feel like okay, the director, at least I'm feeling like the director's like, okay, just wander around, Ripley, you bend over, you look underneath there. Tom,
it's actually got it all.
Yeah, exactly. Tom, you look up in that corner there, and I mean that seemed. It felt a little like it was just like actors just doing their looking around thing, and that was why it was just a little too long for me. And then there was another one of the special effects shots or one of the visual effects shots with the when the ship is going into orbit. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any engines on or anything. It's just a kind of a weird angle. It's almost a little too. It's just a little too long there.
It's
too.
Like the ship.
Yeah, the ship's at like a weird angle, and it's just going. It's making the planet fall early on.
What bothered me was that jump cut with the
head.
Robot.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like mechanical jump cut to a real head, and the
head looked terrible
man.
Too.
Behind the fact that it was a bad prosthetic,
you need to take into account one, the era it was made in.
Oh yeah, sure.
And
even
two,
still, I think I
at least. I know that I'm looking for that. Like, when is this? When are they going to switch from the prosthetic to the real head? So you like have that in
cut.
Your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
yeah. No. I would have. If it were me, I wouldn't have shown the prosthetic until it was on fire.
I
want to show it's on fire. That's cool.
Like,
yeah.
There was a lot
so
of movement
clear.
That they wanted to do with the prosthetic, so you can see like the inside of it, and that's all cool. But then show like Ripley, like, oh my God, and then go to like a real
easy fix.
Yeah, yeah, I know that. I mean, yeah, it's not a perfect film.
That's true.
I was gonna think of one other. There's one other shot I think that just seems like it's way too. There's just a couple other places in like the first third where just the shot seems a little too long. It's holding on to. But I mean, like I said, some of that stuff at the beginning where they're just talking over each other and having their little side conversations. It's all so it adds like such a great depth of character, and
I love
it really
when
makes
they make
it
you
great.
Use your imagination when you go to this abandoned ship and there's like this weird alien thing and like this ginormous gun and there's all these embedded alien eggs in the bottom. It's like, wow, what happened? That was always my favorite part for some
reason. Yeah, no, it throws you into a world.
Yeah.
Completely, because it's in the future. There are these companies, and there are other aliens, I guess.
Yeah, it's a misleading title. The first one should have been called Aliens.
Yeah, and so there's a lot more going on in the sides of the world that this story is taking place in than just this. So it immediately gives you this kind of cool, I don't know, I guess depth to what's going on some level. But it's grounded in the realism of these are just a bunch of guys that like work in a mining ship, and they just like want to get home and get paid, and they've had a long haul of it.
Let's be realistic about this. So there's this android on the ship that's trying to find like other forms of life.
Yeah, the one thing that's weird, where you talked about the prequel thing that's not going to be a prequel now, that is that one place where it's like, how did they know to look for this thing here?
Right.
That's still like even through the whole series, they've kind of never fully answered that question.
Explain how they knew what was going on.
Yeah. And
Unless there was some sort of ties with like this new alien species, but even still, I mean, like the androids, like we want to get some sort of alien life. They could have just like taken that elephant-looking thing out of the gunship and said, "Oh, mission accomplished. Bring it back.
Yeah,
to kill everyone in some insane mission."
Well, I mean, who knows? It could just be as simple as they picked up the transmission and they're like, "Well, if you find something," but it says very specifically, you know, explicitly, like organism, bring organism back, so they already know there's something there, I guess.
Yeah, they did.
And that is, I mean, that's sort of a problem in the storytelling too. It's like, well, how did the bad guys know?
Yeah.
And the in a weird way, the alien isn't so much the antagonist because it's just being it's just doing what it's doing, but the antagonist is the corporation.
Yeah.
And even more so, I'd say in Aliens, that
it's always
the
a corporation.
Case. Yeah,
the whole franchise,
the whole Weyland-Yutani or Yutani.
Finger puppet.
Yeah, exactly. That's another thing I wanted to mention. That whole weird thing where when you first see it, it's so almost vulnerable and unthreatening, and then it gets away, and then it becomes a problem. So they do this weird thing where they build a lot of tension very early on before anything has even happened.
Again, it's probably this feminist thing where it comes out, it's like this little penis. And then all of a sudden, let that thing go, and it's a monster. And look where you get.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
Malcolm, thank you.
Yeah. But it's just it's makes the characters' behavior almost a little more realistic because they're kind of like, yeah, we're gonna may break off into groups and go find this thing and take it.
I like
it
your
out.
Possum analogy.
Yeah, it's like you're chasing after some
totally
creature
valid.
That got in your house.
You see,
know?
This thing is about the size of a squirrel that runs off, and they're like, okay, well let's shock it, let's burn it, let's get it out of here, and then it turns out to be the size of like fucking camel. It's just running through the air.
It's a giant man-like thing that means to do them harm in a real way, and it all happens so quick and moves so fast that
how long does it take to develop into an adult? Like an hour or something?
I don't know. It's
that is a time
film,
problem.
And that's what I was talking about. Every film, it feels like sometimes it takes a few hours. Sometimes it's like you turn your back and the thing is going to be an adult.
Well, in Aliens, I don't know if it's so much of a problem that they address because
does it cover what they are hauling. What's their freight?
It's just
it's
some kind of
like
fuel. It's
hamburgers.
Unobtainium. No, they're a mining ship. They're a mining ship. So it's some kind of ore. It's some kind of stuff that's used to make stuff. It's metals and ores and fuels or something. It's unobtainium.
That's probably what you would feed on if your blood is acid.
Yeah, who knows?
Unobtainium.
But
I want to get some molecular acid, wherever that stuff is that they used in the movie. That looks like fun.
Yeah, that was another thing.
I think the strongest acid is hydrofluoric.
But the acid going through that they were chasing, it's like, what? It's going to breach the hull. What are you going to do? Acid.
Yeah.
Give me your pen!
Come on, we have to chase it!
Well,
I want to see it breach the hull!
Well, I mean, you do want to see where it's dripping, where it's coming.
You
want to
deal with the problem,
anything super
but what
critical.
Do you do?
They would just, they should turn off the artificial gravity.
What do you start like undergrounded? What do you
I don't know. Pee on it?
You have to. You can't do. The point is, you can't do anything until you know what's going on. So wait a minute, real quick. Run over here and give me your out of five rating here.
Oh, five out of five for sci-fi film.
Four.
Sci-fi.
Well, then what is a five out of five in the sci-fi range?
I haven't gotten there yet.
Oh.
It's a 5 out of 5.
That sounds like a
what'd
personal
you give
problem.
Michael?
4.
I'm going to nitpick and say 4.5 out of 5.
Okay.
I'll say 3.5.
What is a 5 out of 5?
What's that?
5?
Yeah.
Back
to the Future.
The Matrix.
The Matrix is a five. Terminator Judgment Day is a five.
Yeah,
that's a five.
Aliens.
Even Aliens, maybe.
I'd give it.
I'd probably rate them the same, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would rate them the same. They're both 4.5.
They're both four. The Dark Knight is a five.
That's
Dark
not a five.
I know.
I actually don't do it by genre. I use the genre to factor in how to assess it, but I don't separate them that way.
All right.
I don't like give it a special.
Until Aliens, then.
Yeah.
Cool. Aliens.
Take it easy. Drive safe, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I'm 4.5 for Alien for sure.
Okay.
It's just you have to really be like watching it to point out the flaws in it. I think that the director's cut is a little overlong, and honestly, I don't think
though.
It really isn't. But it adds a little bit more character flair. With some of the side characters, and it adds that thing with Dallas, but other than that it really doesn't do much, and so it's one of those cases where I could live without it. I think the theatrical cut is perfectly fine.
He made that kind of clear in the beginning. It's like, I was happy with it, there's just a few things I just wanted to tweak.
You know what though, like this was might have been the heyday of DVD with the DVD double dip and everything, you know, so it could have just been an easy like, hey, hey Ridley, can you come up with like
more
2 more minutes to add to it and we'll re-release it with a couple.
This is not a well-known fact, most DVDs.
Can I grab your lens kit now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, what were you going to say, J-Man?
Oh, God. Something about Alien.
Yeah, we were talking about, like, the little piece... Oh, the director's cut versus the original, and the
right.
double dip potential.
Right.
Was,
oh, yeah. The only thing I was going to say is this is a very... It's not a well-known fact, but most DVD releases are slightly different from the theatrical version in some way or another.
Is that a length issue, like they need it to get
just it could be anything. I mean, like, what's an example? Lord of the Rings, the first one, the Fellowship of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, in the theatrical version, there's like way in the background, there's like a big rig truck that goes by and it's like giving off the smoke, it's like almost unnoticeable. But like, if you pay attention, someone told you where it was, you'd see it. In the DVD version, they CGI it over and they put like a house there, so the smoke is coming out of a chimney.
Oh, so
little things
some,
like
some
that.
Kind of correction.
It's so subtle, but like, most DVDs are always different from the theatrical version. That's all I was saying.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That sounds about right, yeah. They call from different versions because they've got, like, the European version.
Well, the director finally gets to see his movie on the big screen and the full viewing of it, and he's like, oh, shit, wait, that's not supposed to be there.
Yeah. I didn't see too much like that in this one. I mean, like you said, there's the head special effect, and that's about it, where it's just kind of, is what it is.
Action. Probably by far right here. That's all you really need.
What's the quote from the book you got here?
Nearly all rich and powerful people are not notably talented, educated, charming, or good-looking. They become rich and powerful by wanting to be rich and powerful. Continue.
Oh, yeah.
This is wrong. Yeah.
Well, they want power. They want to control something.
I see that in your eyes. Yeah, I see the desire of power.
More importantly, you see the lack of, what is it, talent and intellect.
You don't need that.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, when you purge yourself from that, which was an interesting thing on the alien screen when it said purge.
Yeah.
When you aliens yourself of that, you too will be rich and powerful.
Indeed.
Yeah.